Welcome to The Smart Life, a podcast from Beacon Agency that explores the latest in smart home and Internet of Things technology. I'm your host, Sophie, and I'm the content director here at Beacon. Each week, I'm joined by some of the biggest thought leaders in smart tech, here to unpick the challenges and opportunities faced by the industry as we endeavour to make the world of smart tech just that little bit more human.
Today, I'm joined by Nick Sutton of the Luceco Group, a British-owned manufacturer and distributor of lighting, electrical, portable power and AV products. Nick works as one of their product managers, overseeing both residential smart electrical and lighting products, as well as home electric vehicle charging points. Before working in the domestic market, Nick also worked within the commercial sector, running his own smart lighting company that specialised in selling to and educating installers. Nick, welcome to The Smart Life.
Hi, Sophie. Thank you very much and thanks for having me.
Pleasure. So, have you always been interested in smart technology?
I have, at least since university. If we talk about smart technology being, the sort of products that we're going to be talking about today, I've always been a techie. I think, you know, since being a kid, I was interested in computers and audio and video, and then it was at university that I sort of found out that smart homes were a thing.
At university?
Yeah. So I was studying something called media technology, which was a sort of a cooking pot of let's say electronics, a bit of computing, a bit of media, sort of AV, audio, video stuff. And it was getting to the point where we were all thinking about what we would do after university, and I saw in the library one of those dummies books, those yellow ones.
Oh yeah.
There was one called Smart Homes for Dummies, and I thought, smart homes, okay, is that a thing? So I picked that up and I started reading it and realized that there were, I think it was more of an American thing. Especially in America, there was a bit of a scene or an industry that was emerging or starting up based on smart home technology. So I Googled smart homes, Oxford. I was at Oxford Brookes University. And up came a company called Simply Automate, who were in the local area. And I wrote them an email and said, can I work for you? And they offered me a job. And yeah, that was the beginning of it. So.
Amazing. All from one of those guide to for dummies books. That is amazing. I always love those books, but I always dread how much they must have aged. Like I wish you still could get your hands on that specific edition and be like, oh, that is out of date now.
Yeah, I might have to go on eBay after this and see if we get one for sort of memento.
Please do. We'd like a sort of follow-up editor's note, like, he got it is out of date.
Yeah. So
that's so cool. But I mean, you mentioned that you were interested in tech since you were a kid, though. Do you remember the first bit of tech that you got really interested in?
It was definitely, that's a good question. It was, I think my dad used to have computers. He had one of those BBC micros. I don't know if you remember those sort of old school computers that we had at school. My dad was sort of a bit of a techie himself. Well, at least he thought he was, until the day that, a friend of mine came over and we sort of managed to dismantle, one of his computers, and then, we managed to change a pin setting on it, and when we turned it on, it literally blew up like smoke. Smoke came out of it, and in which case, obviously, I was really concerned and worried that my dad was going to go absolutely mad.
Quite rightly.
What he did say to me was, if you can fix this, I'll pay for it. So, a friend of mine told me about this computer fair. And we went down there and I managed to buy some components, and I, under sort of feeling the pressure of my father being really angry, managed to fix his computer. And that was really the beginning of getting my hands on them. But, that was really, I guess maybe a reason why, I learned it when I was.
Amazing. And the rest is history. I would just think, no, sorry, I've blown it up. I would go and face the consequences. I don't think I would have a chance in hell of fixing it, but that is incredible.
so you learn by doing, basically.
Yeah, I love that. So when you saw this book, take me back, university library, Oxford Brookes, you're browsing, you're thinking, how on earth am I going to pad out these essays? looking to add to your bibliography, and you see this Smart Home for Dummies. What was it about that concept, the idea of a smart home? I don't know what are we allowed to ask what year we're talking about? You know,
that's fine. It was probably 2003 or four.
Right, so still pretty unfamiliar in this country. What was it about the whole idea of the smart home that captivated your attention to the point that you wanted to reach out to a local company and ask for a job?
Yeah, I think it was more when I thought about smart home back then, all the technology, well, most of the technology looked like something I couldn't afford myself.
Yeah.
And so I envisaged a sort of a job or some kind of job role where I was basically designing or supplying it to others. So the company I work for in Oxford, they sold smart home technology or gadgets and equipment on the internet. So they were like an early internet store.
Cool.
And then from there, I had a Norwegian girlfriend, and we decided to go and move to Norway for a year. And in keeping with the sort of career trajectory, I found a company that was offering smart homes to basically wealthy Norwegians.
Mm.
And again, managed to get a job there, which was good. And so what that was this smart home industry in America had become quite popular amongst people that had very large houses. You know, those are classic American huge houses you see.
Whoa.
I mean, maybe like the, you know, MTV Cribs style houses. And this technology was like, let's say, multi-room audio, multi-room video, because you'd have sort of one, you didn't want to have 20 different DVD players. You'd have one that could play video in all the rooms. You could have one or two CD players that could play music in any room. So there was this technology was coming out of America, and then the company I work for in Norway was importing this technology and sort of offering it there. So I suddenly got involved in this whole scene of high-end home automation systems, extremely niche, and I did worry that these skills were not really that transferable, but yeah, I guess that kind of kept me in the industry. But ended up doing a lot of that, and it would go hand in hand with things like home cinemas as well, and eventually ended up with things like touchscreens. Of course, back then you didn't have things like iPads, so any kind of touchscreen was very sort of primitive and very expensive in those days. So
you mentioned it was really niche by then, but I mean, this is now fast forward 20 years and smart home technology is no longer, well, not exclusively at least, such a thing of luxury. And actually, it's evolved much more into the mass market with increasing speed and ferocity. Why do you think it has become so much more kind of readily ingrained in people's homes and no longer this luxurious MTV Cribs audience of yore?
Yeah, no, good question. So, I mean, just taking a step back from all of that, I think looking at what's happened over the last sort of say 20 years, is that computers have got more powerful, and obviously things like smartphones, they've got more powerful, and the pricing has come right down. And where we are today is that, you know, if you think about a smart device that can connect to, say, Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, essentially they're a tiny little computer. Inside that device is a tiny little chip. And those devices have become now, they're so mass produced and they're so low cost that you can basically fit one into a device, let's say like a smart plug or a smart extension lead. It doesn't drive the cost up that much.
Mm.
And also the rise of Wi-Fi. So, you know, Wi-Fi now is just completely normal. You know, you get a free Wi-Fi router from your internet provider. You can, you know, you've got Wi-Fi everywhere you go, basically. And therefore, you've already got an infrastructure in your home that supports, you know, devices that you can buy very cheaply because of these cheap chips. As time goes on, they're just getting easier to use and cheaper than they ever were before.
Mm. Besides,
No, I was just going to say the other the other thing that's happened is, of course, the big four, shall we say, or Google, Apple, Amazon, and I'm trying to think of the fourth one in the big four. But those guys have all been pushing their, you know, things like the Alexa, Amazon Echo, Google Home Assistants, and Apple HomeKit, which of course have got sort of two purposes. One is to enable your smart home to be more useful, but the other purpose is obviously to push goods and services from them. But with those sort of, and you know, those companies can afford to advertise their products, you know, with huge marketing campaigns globally, and therefore it sort of created a bit of a rush of technology into people's homes. And you're seeing things like Ring doorbells and mesh Wi-Fi systems and all sorts of technology just being almost like in every single home nowadays.
Mm. So if you were going to update the Smart Home for Dummies book that you encountered, I don't know why I'm fixated on this book, I just love the fact that it existed, but if you were going to update it and you had a chapter about the industry, what would you say, if you were writing it 2023, what would you say are the biggest opportunities that the industry currently has, but also the biggest challenges that it's facing?
Yeah, sure. That's a very good question. And it's one that I actually came up against, I think, quite a lot when I ran a lighting controls company, and we had a number of installers who were sort of specialist smart home installers, a bit like what I was, you know, when I lived in Norway and whatnot. And I'd say the biggest challenges are that I think smart technology is getting a little bit commoditized in terms of it being, you know, cheaper than ever before, easier to set up. So a lot of the things that you might hire a professional to do in the past is that now something you can basically order off Amazon and follow a very easy to use app, you know, and set it up yourself. So that would be some of the challenges. And I think if you talk about the industry and installers, I think they need to be ever more innovative in ways to create revenues and be able to offer customers really valuable services. Mm. And I think there is opportunity. And I would say that with looking at just the dramatic increase of smart device users, you've also got opportunities where there are lots of devices that still do need professional installation. It could be something like a Ring doorbell, for example, which if you want to hardwire it in, you know, it might need a bit of cabling in and et cetera. Or it could be something like an EV charger, which is another part of what I do in my current role. I look after EV chargers at the Seco, but those need to be installed by a professional electrician. And they're also smart. So I think there's an element of getting into people's homes to do a certain job, and then also making that contact and then being able to offer further services that the customer might like. So there's an opportunity there for a bit of exposure, shall we say.
Yeah.
That would be, yeah, my thought on that.
Because I guess installers are almost sort of micro salespeople for all the different smart brands, because if they were in someone's house, like you said, fitting a doorbell, and they happen to strike up a conversation, I don't know, speaking from personal experience, if they were a frazzled mother of a toddler and they heard a specific frustration, and they said, oh, did you know that this device that they hadn't mentioned at all would actually make your life a lot easier, that sort of opportunity for upselling, there's an amazing potential on the shoulders of the professional installer community to act as advocates for the wider smart home, and therefore they are a really appealing group of people to smart home brands to get them on board.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there are a number of companies that have sort of installer schemes where, you know, you can look up installers from the website. So I mean, we have that actually on our EV charging website. You know, you type in your postcode, it comes up with a number of installers locally to you, their phone number. But in order to get onto that list, they have had to pass a sort of online test. So done some training, but also prove a few things about their business to us, for us to basically list them on there. So there's definitely a it's a very valuable relationship there that needs to be maintained. And I think that exists across, you know, lots of things, not just smart technology, but even just electrical in general. You know, installers start to build relationships with brands in terms of how that they can trust their products, that they do what they say, the warranties are, you know, kept and adhered to, and that they're reliable and that there's someone there at the end of the phone if they need to speak to someone.
Yeah.
So, there's always going to be an element of anything that sort of, you know, needs. So, for example, we've got a smart double socket, which is quite unique. There aren't really that many on the market in the UK. And, you know, most people, if they've done a little bit of tinkering, can fit a socket, you know, cut off the power and swap a socket. But most people probably feel comfortable with an electrician to do that. So this is something that we do. They do sell on Amazon, so we know that lots of people are probably just installing them themselves. But they also sell in electrical wholesalers, where it's mostly installers that get them. So we know that there's a sort of a balance of professional and DIYers using those products.
Cool. So the Seco has been around for over 70 years. It's got some really well-established brands within your operation, and the group has seen technology change a lot since the 60s when it was formed. And you've been really personally involved in a relatively recent venture into smart devices. Why was the smart home something that the Seco wanted to venture into?
Yes. So I think there's two reasons. One is that we already sell a number of electrical products. In fact, we have a hugely comprehensive range of electrical products, some of which are probably in, you know, maybe at least a third of the listeners' homes that are listening to this. So that'd be things like sockets, light switches. We would do things, you know, under the Masterplug brand, we do extension leads and cable reels and portable power and things like that. So being already like a bit of a household name brand, shall we say, it kind of made sense for us to have a smart offering, so that it might be that people wanted to match their sockets just keep that kind of brand loyalty and have smart devices from British General that they trust. So the other, you know, all the market research showed that the sort of size of the smart market was just growing quite dramatically, and it just made sense for us to try to have a market share of that in general. And there's also, I think, you know, from a company perspective, a cost of not investing in innovative technology.
Yeah.
And therefore, if you, you know, by not getting into the smart side of things, you know, we could be in danger of being left behind, and perhaps other brands, you know, might come along and sort of just, it'd be harder for us to catch up, you know, further down the line. So I think for those two reasons, really, just market share and keeping up with the times.
And I guess also it's the excitement of innovation. There's so much, the speed of growth in the industry. It's sort of for a brand like Seco that's always had its finger on the pulse of, if you'll pardon the pun, of the next big thing. And I can't help it, I'm a word person. That they've always had that kind of eye on what's going on. The like you said, you don't want to be left behind, but also I would imagine, like you, someone in your youth was excited by the idea of refixing a computer, would be that you've got a whole group of people who would be excited about the innovation and potential development that the smart home represents as well.
Absolutely. And you know, I mean, for me personally, I think it's really fun working with the tech teams and getting the software working, and you know, I think personally it's really fun, but ultimately as a product manager, you know, we have to do sort of business cases and to prove to the stakeholder of the business that there's a market need for what we're doing, and also to be a bit visionary as well, to sort of say why we're actually doing these sort of products. And you know, I came on board with the company about a year and a half ago. And there was already some smart products that had been launched, and that, you know, they're sort of They're good products. They're quite cost effective. You know, they don't cost the earth. You can control them from your voice assistants. You can put them on timers, and they sell really well. We sell sort of tens of thousands of them, you know, on a variety of stores. And we have, I can't tell you the exact figure, but we have hundreds of thousands of users on the app, and we you know, it's quite fun getting that information, seeing, you know, reviews coming on the app store and things like that. We, you know, in terms of user data, that's all kind of kept privately and in accordance with GDPR. But in terms of where we are now, with everything going on, the type of products and the reasons why we're doing them has changed a little bit. So I thought this could be a segue onto sort of what the future holds for our smart products as well.
Great.
So, you know, we've obviously just come through COVID, a lockdown, which is now, 2021? I've looked up some statistics, and 60% of the UK's adult population worked from home during the first coronavirus lockdown. And then looking at following on from that, 26% of Brits plan to continue to work from home permanently or occasionally after lockdown. So that's a huge increase of people working from home. And there were some studies into sort of how much more energy people use are using due to working from home. And I think there was one calculation done by U-Switch, which said something like there'd be a 75% increase of energy use at home, which actually turned out to be incorrect, because it assumed that people were working all of the time that they were at home, which is not, and the heating was going to be on all of the time, which is quite not correct. So there'd be some better studies into it. And on average, a full-time worker uses 21% more energy than a full-time office worker. So I think that's still a significant more amount. And then, of course, we've got the household energy bills that increased by 54% in April 22. And we've got this energy price cap at the moment, which has... kept prices from spiraling out of control, but they are going to go up again later this year.
Yeah.
And I think, when the sort of cost of living and the energy prices went up and the cost of living crisis started, I read that Google searches for energy bill help soared by 3,000%.
Wow, really?
Yeah. So what all of this, you know, points to the fact that you know, smart home things could be seen as a bit of a toy, a bit as a gimmick, as we were sort of discussing before the interview. But it really is putting into the crosshairs how important these sort of devices can be for saving energy.
Yeah.
And there was a study by, I forgot the name, classic. There was a study by the UK Energy, it'll come to me in a minute, the Department of something or other.
A study, an industry study.
There was an industry study, yeah, a governmental one, which actually is being cited by a number of sort of say shops and electrical wholesalers, where they found that using smart plugs could save or smart devices at home and turning off devices when they're not in use could save homeowners an average of £65 a year.
Wow.
And we did our own studies as well, where we actually got a number of staff within the company to submit all of the devices in their home and submit how much energy they used. And then we did an experiment where they used smart plugs to turn off devices at night when out and when on holiday. And we also found a very similar finding. We found it was somewhere between around about £50 to about £150, depending on how aggressively they program those devices. So going forward, it's definitely my sort of mission to make sure that our next generation range of products all have energy monitoring and features around that that allow you to see how much you've been saving, how much it could save, and things like that. So, yeah.
It's amazing hearing you talk, especially hearing how many statistics and data and industry reports you just have to hand. I love that. And you're obviously someone who constantly has their eye on the findings that inform what you're doing, which I really love. But for someone who started off by referencing MTV Cribs as a
reference,
it's amazing hearing how much in the 20 years that you personally have been interested in smart home, we've gone from seeing it as luxury, a thing of the rich and fabulous, to things that can save people money on their energy bills. And for me, I take such comfort from that. I think if anything was ever going to convince me of the goodness of a product, it would be something that had a positive benefit on the people around me. And this idea of people-centric storytelling in the industry is something that personally I love. And actually, while I was researching for our chat, I was really struck by Luceco's mission statement around bringing power to life, which, as well as being a pun that I love. And also, it made me very happy because Beacon's own strapline is "We bring stories to life." It struck a chord for me because this idea of breathing life into that which is made of wires and cables and chips and data board, all sorts of things. Mm. How central finding a real life message and real life solutions that improve people's quality of life, how important that is to the industry. It's obviously something that you really think about as well. Everything you just mentioned to me was all about the benefits to the individual, not just the benefits of to be able to show off or to be able to the bragging rights of something. It's about an actual genuine improvement to their well-being, to their financial situation, to their home life, to their work-life balance. And I think it's incredible to think that the industry has moved that far forward in quite a short space of time in terms of technological advancements, usual timelines.
100%, yeah. I think, you know, we're in this time now where, you know, most households are being squeezed, right? And so it's time for sort of meaningful purchasing, shall we say, as opposed to sort of maybe just buying lots of toys. And I think if we can have products that actually help us in our everyday life and make our life easier, but also save us money, that's a huge win and a huge bonus. But of course, you want a bit of both. You want to have a bit of fun with these things as well. So I think, you know, things like the lighting and the color, you know, the sort of will remain. But also the fact that you can set timers to save money and to turn lights off and you don't need them will be, yeah, they're equally important.
Yeah. I love that there's now this whole kind of sub-industry within the industry. It's a terrible sentence. But there's a proportion of the industry that have their eye constantly on what else could it do and how can it be a force for good? And I take such comfort from that because I think the word gimmick follows the smart home industry around a bit too much, and I think possibly rightly so to begin with, possibly, but actually I see it more and more as this force for good and being able to drive change, to show, to have statistics that back things up. It's incredible, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all about what sort of device could actually save you the most money, right? And actually, actually, Sophie, I'll ask you, what do you think is the most money saving device that you can get in your home?
Oh, I would imagine it would be something that I personally would consider really boring but really worthy, like something in the infrastructure of my house that was, I don't know, something to do with
a bit of a mean and a bit of a trick question.
Oh, go on. You've tricked me. I fell for it. I feel like one of them QI.
It might not be that mean. I don't know if you've got an electric car.
I don't have an electric car, no.
Okay. Well, getting an electric car charger at home is the most energy saving device if you have an electric car.
I was gonna say if you don't, is that still true?
Unfortunately, I don't have one. I've been asking company one for a while. So if my boss is listening, can I please have one?
Oh, yeah. Please, on behalf of Nick, that we'd like one for Nick too.
Yeah. So we do a range of chargers as well. And the average range on like EV cars is around about 211 miles at the moment. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing 10,000 miles a year, that's about 47 charges. So if you charge your car using a public charge point, looking at some average cost, you're going to be paying around about £15 per charge, possibly more. Possibly, you know, depending on some of the motorway chargers can charge considerably more. If you're going to be using a home charger at your home during the daytime, you're looking around about £10 per charge. I say daytime, this is if you've got one of these, either if you're just using a normal electricity tariff or if you've got a sort of a night and day cheaper and more expensive tariff. But if you've got like one of these smart tariffs, you know, Octopus do them, things like that, you could be looking as little as around about £5 for a full charge at night. Wow. So that could save, if you were just comparing that to charging publicly for those 10,000 miles, you're going to be saving nearly £500 a year. So this is like a big reason. And I think, you know, we're going to be seeing, I don't know if you know that all new homes in the UK that are built have to actually be supplied with an EV charger.
No, I did not know that, no.
Yeah.
And other now or from a point in the future?
It's been, I don't know when it came into effect, certainly for the last, I think, at least a year. So this applies to new homes only. There are a number of grants as well to incentivize like homes and businesses and landlords to install EV chargers, so that the government can give people up to about £350 towards the installation of a charger. The grants are sort of, they were a little bit better a year ago. They're not as good now, but they are still around. And businesses can apply for up to 20 chargers and get that £350 back on up to 20 chargers. And obviously with the increase of EVs, over the next, we're going to be seeing purely fossil fuel cars. They won't be allowed to be sold after 2032. Mm. We're seeing a huge increase of EVs on the roads anyway. This is an area where home users can save money, but also it's not just about the home user. It's also about the electrical grid. So the government has actually reintroduced regulation and legislation to allow. It sounds a bit dodgy. Like they could technically control someone's EV charger. So some people probably won't be happy with that. But what is the reason being is that they can manage the demand on the grid.
Mm.
So that if everyone's coming home and charging the car at 5:30 PM or 6 PM when they get home, that's a huge amount of demand on the grid. And they'll be able, there's sort of measures in place to make sure that there's enough electricity for everyone to go around. So one of the things they've done is they've introduced randomized start times. So if everyone sets their car to charge at 6 PM, they won't actually all go on at 6 PM. They'll go on, some will go on before 6 PM, some will go on after 6 PM by about 10 minutes.
Why?
So, and then in where we're heading with this is a lot more people are getting solar on their houses and being able to generate their own electricity. Some people are, there's also battery systems on the market. So people are able to then store the energy and use their batteries during the day when the electricity might be more expensive. But also using these smart EV chargers and solar systems, using the sun's energy to put energy into the car when the batteries are full, for example. So we're going to see, this is a huge area of growth in the UK at the moment, and we're sort of looking at a lot of those things. We've got the EV chargers at the moment. We're just about to launch solar integration, and we're also looking at other technologies that could become part of the ecosystem, and we could offer the market and those sort of things. So
it's incredible to think that how many different options there are and how much cleverness is being utilized, clever solutions to things that have their eye on the future. I think, you know, even this idea of new builds having an EV port now, even though they might not have a car because the petrol cars are going to be phased out. And I think that the industry is much more conscious now, although we've always been thinking, oh, what's going to be the next big disruptor? And I don't think anyone thought that the next big disruptor would be a global pandemic. But I think we're much more thinking, we need to be future-proofing rather than just kind of going, well, this is the way it is now, but it might be updated in a few years. You're actually thinking, what can we do today to enable the development that will come in the future, but in a way that we've put in the groundwork now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's all of this is an effort between sort of like the manufacturers like ourselves, but also, you know, government making changes and us. We need to sort of get to this net zero. We, you know, we need, you know, and we haven't got much time left. We need to find alternate, you know, renewable energies. We need to find alternative ways to, you know, produce energy. And, you know, it all goes hand in hand. So, yeah, we're trying to do our bit and trying to get there first in terms of products. But, yeah, we sort of rely on everyone pulling together as well from the government and consumer side as well.
Yeah. Okay, I've come to my last question for you. I'm going to circle back round to what we started with talking about, which is your personal opinion, personal way into the industry, because my personal little obsession, pet love, is that a thing? No, obsession, we'll stick with that, is the idea of connectivity, connection. I strongly believe, I will keep saying this till the day I die, but I believe if there's a reason that we exist, it's to leave a connection, to forge connections with those around us, with the world around us, and to have a positive impact. And I'm so excited by what smart technology can do to that idea of connectivity. What do you see as the role of smart technology to this idea of connectivity, connection?
That's a really interesting question.
Thank you.
The role of smart technology in terms of connection. So I think the obvious one would be something like communication. We're seeing rise of the way that we communicate on our mobile devices, but also on at work through our computers, through Teams, and even through things like voice assistants, you can dial to each other. So I think ultimately the smart devices create like a physical interface to the internet. I think I struggle to sort of see anything in terms of the, yeah.
It seems to me that like, something you think about possibly inadvertently is not so much our connection to each other, but our connection to the planet and our connection to the generation that is going to come after us. So much of what you've said is about, like I said, looking after the next generation, but also getting down to net zero. So I don't think connection doesn't mean connecting to each other in the communications way exclusively. I think it sounds like what more you have in your plate is this idea of being rooted to our responsibility to look after the planet, the next generation, everything that will follow after us.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I didn't actually see it like that until you mentioned it. I think that's a very good point. And ultimately, we're trying to get to that point where our children, you know, you and me both have got a young child, and I'm sure, you know, I mean, I certainly think about the world that he's going to grow up in, and it makes me happier to know that I'm working on technologies that are going to mean that there's cleaner air in our cities, and that it's ultimately going in the right direction in terms of those things that may make my child's life harder in the future if we don't do them, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure you feel the same.
Absolutely. But much more than I ever have before. I think, I don't know about you, but becoming a parent has made me much more aware of the sense of time and about doing what you can with the time that you've been given and doing good every day. I remember doing NCT, the lady that was running it just said, just take each day as it comes and try to do the best you can each day. And that's become this mantra that I think about, not just in terms of my daughter, but in terms of other things around me. I think, just do the best you can, and have your eye on what's bigger as much as all it takes. For me, that's why I think I'm obsessed with this idea of connection, because a connection is one contact point between two things, and it's the sum of its parts that makes it something bigger. And I think that's true for raising a child. I think it's true for doing your best for the environment. I think it's true for using smart tech to innovate for the greater good. So that's why it's my I will die on this hill, my little obsession with connection.
Yeah. Through this conversation, I think I've sort of like to think of, reflect on that a little bit more in terms of what I'm doing every day. And thanks for that, Sophie. It's a good little thing to bear in mind, you know, as we go through our sort of work lives. And
I'll send you the link to my TED Talk when they book me in.
Okay. Yes, please. Just make sure I get a ticket.
You can be my guest. We'll just stumble through it together. Oh, Nick, thank you so much for your time. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
You're welcome. Really, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure to be on.
That's it for another episode. Thank you so much for listening to The Smart Life. If you like what you heard, don't forget to rate and subscribe. Plus, you can catch all our past episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Here at Beacon, we specialise in finding innovative, people-centric ways to bring the world of the smart home to life. Got a story you need help telling? Get in touch with us today. Visit www.beaconagency.co.uk.